an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Dr. Hillary Hart, a Tampa Bay veterinarian who operates Vet with Hart Veterinary House Call Practice. Dr. Hart's story is unusual in a few ways, including that she went to veterinary school after raising a family and that she's an animal welfare activist. We'll find out more about her and we'll take some calls from listeners about their cats, dogs, or other animals when we speak with Dr. Hart in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Also, I want to mention that 4 weeks from today, WMNF's winter membership drive will be underway. And that day, February 12th, Talking Animals will be raising money for the station. Actually, we have such a usually sizable goal that we hope you'll support us before that day. Go to WMNF.org and find our tip jar on the Talking Animals page. That would be great. And donate early to make this Even a little less daunting, that would be great. I posted the link to our tip jar on the Talking Animals Facebook page and my personal Facebook page just a moment ago. So you can check that out. And if you're a fan of the show and want to continue it to be on the air, please support it and me. $35, $50, whatever you can swing, $100 if you can, that would be great. And if you can do that early, like I say, that really helps us kind of go into the big day, February 12th, with a little cushion, a little breathing room. So that would be fantastic. Thank you. Later in today's show, meanwhile, we'll have a brief conversation with Pat Hose about the 5th Annual Parade of Rescues, an event happening this Saturday, January 18th in Pinellas Park, featuring some 30 or more rescues and animal welfare organizations. Also towards the end of today's show, and Name That Animal Tune, will be offering us the prize, a copy of Bougie and Me, 7 Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me, by animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly, a guest on the show a few years back. We'll get to all this later in the program. First, though, let's hear an animal song. This is the Eels, an animal band, no less, with Little Bird on Talking Animals.
Little bird, hopping on my porch. Know it sounds kind of sad, but what's it all for? Right now, you're the only friend I have in the world, and I just can't take how very much. Goddamn, I miss that girl. Little bird, you look alright. I'm sure it's not easy getting through your night. So tell me this can't be how it's gonna end. Tell me my heart somehow. Dear God, it's gonna mend. Guess you're right. I can't let it take me out without a fight. But right now I can't see making sense of this world. I just can't take out very much. Goddamn, I miss that girl.
That's music from the Eels, with Little Bird, an animal song to get us started this morning. All right, let's speak with Dr. Hart with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Hillary Hart, the Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Hart.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And as I say, unfortunately, all too infrequently, it's great to actually have a guest in studio, make eye contact, all the normal conversational things. So, yay, that's awesome. So let's start out by finding out a little bit about the earlier Hillary Hart, decades before you became Dr. Hart. So where did you grow up, and what was your family like, and your upbringing, and those kinds of things?
Okay, well, I grew up in New York, in Rockland County, and I always knew from the time I was a child I wanted to practice veterinary medicine. But unfortunately, when I went to college the first time, I went to NYU. I got my degree in computer science.
Wow.
At the time, and I was a computer programmer when I graduated. But at the time, unfortunately, my father had been injured in an accident. Mm. So my grades weren't, you know, to get into veterinary medicine, you have to
tough world.
You have to be at the top of your class. That's why I went for computer science. But it always stayed in my heart that that's what I wanted to do later on.
Yeah.
When I became a parent in my mid-20s, and I decided at that time I wanted to be a full-time mother. And also I didn't like the weather up north, so we moved down to Florida. So I've been living in Florida in Pinellas for about 30 years.
Okay.
And, you know, because I was the mother of one child, when I was growing up, I had a best friend who was a foster child. And because of the relationship she had with her foster family, that was also something in my heart that I wanted to do, too. Hmm. So I became a foster parent.
Oh, wow. Great.
I have three children, two of which were my foster children adopted.
Yeah.
And then basically, you know, so during that time, I volunteered and worked part-time jobs until they grew up. And once my oldest son started high school, I decided, okay, he's going to be leaving me. My life totally revolved around them. And it was time for me, because I was divorced at that time.
Okay.
So I needed to find a career that would bring joy to my life. And so I knew, you know, that's what I wanted to do. So I went back to school, went to USF, St. Pete College, started applying for veterinary colleges. And once my youngest was out of high school, I went to St. Matthew's University. I went to school in the Caymans, which I loved. It was a wonderful school. And I have to say, I can't speak more highly of all of the professors and the program there, because all of them came from accredited universities in the United States. So we were getting the same education that you would get in the United States.
Yeah.
And then the last year, I went to clinics up at Purdue University, and that's really,
Well, that's pretty interesting, because, you know, when the emptiness syndrome is looming, you know, for people in that situation, commonly people, of course, make alterations to their lives. So they travel, they write, they take classes, they volunteer, or some combination thereof. But I think it's safe to say a pretty microscopic percentage of people facing emptiness decide to go to veterinary school. But you've already mentioned that that was kind of an original dream, even as a kid, I guess.
Right,
so in some ways, you were just sort of circling back to what had long been an important passion and goal. So,
Well, you know, I always volunteered at the SPCA and other, you know, other animal, like rescue groups. I volunteered with them. So it was always something that I was drawn to.
Sure. Right. And then, so what was, you've already kind of described that there was great professors and some of your students, but what was the actual experience of vet school like for you at that point, especially going back kind of as a returning student? I mean, did you find it grueling? Did you find it exhilarating? Did you find it both?
I found it both, but veterinary school, it's a 24-hour a day, you know, you're in classes all day long, and then you go home and study, and so it's a lot of work. And I think for an older student, you know, when you're in your 20s, I think you have a much, you know, I had in my 20s a photographic memory. And when you get older, you know, you have to work harder.
Photographs were a little blurry at that point, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I did work very hard, but I was at the top of my class.
Wow, great.
But, you know, I did spend a lot of time, you know, I spent time enjoying myself too snorkeling because Cayman has the most beautiful coral reefs. If you ever have the opportunity to go there, I would definitely, you know, recommend that if you like to scuba dive and snorkel.
So the study breaks were pretty appealing then.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. And this sounds already rhetorical from what you've said and the great enthusiasm. But at any point, given how hard you had to work and how difficult it was, and again, you were not the 20-something kids that you were otherwise probably were your classmates. Did at any point you said, God, I know I always wanted to do this, but, you know, I just don't know if I want to keep going. It was always like, here,
no
full steam ahead.
No matter what I had to, I always looked at it like, take it one day at a time, and it's only a short period of time in your life, you know. And so I recommend that to anyone in vet school who is experiencing that, or if you're planning on going to vet school, you just have to take it one day at a time and realize it's just a few years. And once you get through it and you get licensed, then it's all, you know.
Right. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Cool. So now at that point, not now, but now at that point in the story, you're a newly minted veterinarian. What sort of practice at that point did you think, hey, this is what I want to do. This is, now that I am a vet, well, this is the kind of the practice I want to have.
Right. Well, since I'm an older person and I do have a lot of friends who are seniors, and I have also work with a lot of rescue groups, and I have a lot of friends with multiple animals. So, well, when I say dogs and cats, and, you know, I just felt that there was a need for someone to be able to come out to the home and help a lot of people that weren't able to get care for their pets. Because, you know, I found a lot of seniors, they would have to rely on calling a taxi or a family member or a friend to get them to get health care for their pets. So that's what motivated me to, you know, start my house call practice.
So pretty much as soon as you had graduated and were officially a vet, that was your first step. It's like you knew from the get-go that was the kind of practice you wanted to have.
Well, I always knew I wanted to have that kind of practice, but because I went to a foreign school, every state has different laws regarding licensing. So I went through, when you go to a foreign university, there's two ways, two tracks. It's called, one's a PAVE program and one's the ECFVG. So I went through both programs. Texas allows you to practice veterinary medicine when you graduate with the PAVE, but Florida does not. So I had to actually, it took another year. So when I first graduated, I moved to Texas so I could practice. I practiced in a small animal practice there. And then I was still studying for the ECFVG, which is, you actually have to take it's a 3-day hands-on exam to prove that you have the same skills that a student that graduated from an American accredited university.
Interesting. Yeah.
Right. And it was it was horse medicine, cow medicine, surgery, radiology. So, you know, small animal medicine, everything. So, you know, it took about a year. So then I came back to Florida to practice because I wanted to be, you know, with my family.
Sure, of course.
And then it was about a year ago, December. That's my anniversary. So
of starting the house call mobile.
Right.
Okay. And just to back up for a sec, it sounds like that someone that has studied veterinary medicine, in your case, in the Caymans or whatever, is there a kind of snootiness here about how you were trained or the kind of school that you went to? Is that part of the reason they have this additional requirement or just want to make sure that because you went to school there, you fulfill these particular elements?
Right. I think that I wouldn't necessarily, I'm sure that there is some snootiness amongst some veterinarians who feel that if you didn't go to an American accredited university, that their education is better than yours.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily even mean other vets so much as just kind of the overall view in the medical association
that too.
Yeah.
But honestly, I don't think about it. It doesn't.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not a concern of mine, really. And
right. And no, I was just curious.
I think they do, because you have people not only coming from the islands, but coming from many other countries.
Sure.
Where, you know, they may not be taught the same, what we consider
right. The curriculum might, sure,
techniques would vary. And care.
Right. And, yeah. And the same kind of thing you find when people go to medical school, you know, elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think to I guess, ensure that there's a standard level of being
care.
Able to practice and
of care.
Sure.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And I think it's for the protection of, you know, our pets. And
sure.
So I think it's important.
Cool. Well, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Dr. Hillary Hard, a veterinarian in the Tampa Bay area here, who went to a veterinary school after raising a family and having a different career and being a mom and a foster mom. If you'd like to ask Dr. Hard a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, Dr. Hart, so given the path that you've traveled, and not only in terms of the actual training, but just being a longtime animal person, I'm going to assume, we didn't really cover this when you're talking about your formative years, but I'm going to assume you were probably the kind of kid that when there was an animal around the neighborhood that was sick or needed help, you were the one that would tend to them.
Right.
Yeah. So
exactly.
this is a a through line all the way. Right. So with all that in mind, and then having had the training and going through all the additional sort of steps of the licensing, et cetera, what sort of philosophy kind of forms the, maybe the guiding principles of your practice, not necessarily strictly the fact that you're doing in-home care, although that's critical, but I just mean just more on a broader philosophical basis. What is your view of how you want to practice veterinary medicine?
I would say I take more of a holistic view, and when I'm practicing veterinary medicine, and I look at, you know, the whole situation. I don't know. I see so many different, I would say, you know, I'm very conscious about, I feel preventive medicine is real,
sort of critical to,
right. So trying to prevent,
to keeping them from actually needing to see you as much as they might otherwise, right? Kind
right.
of in a way. Yeah.
Right.
And so what are things, recommendations you make in the way of preventative care that would help keep those animals healthy and on track?
Right. So I feel nutrition is, proper nutrition is a very big part of keeping your pet healthy. Vaccination, but I would say not over vaccinating your pets, and vaccinating based on lifestyle, not just, because there are, you know, some schools of thought where every year, you know, you go to the vet and
right.
you should have, you know, certain vaccinations.
So there's
but
kind of that
really
one size fits all thing, whereas you're
right.
saying instead it should be case by case.
Right. So, you know, every patient that I have is treated as an individual, basically.
Right. So
yeah.
So you wouldn't necessarily give this dog over here a particular vaccination based on their age, their medical background, other circumstances, whereas maybe a similar dog over here with a different set of details might well be one you would recommend.
Right.
So
right,
it is really,
exactly.
truly, yeah, on the animal in particular, individually.
Right, right.
Okay.
So I treat
it as because always a controversial topic, vaccinations, just as it is with you know, in the human world. So it's always interesting to see how people view that. Yeah.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So let's we've already gotten, not surprisingly, a few emails. Actually, let's first take a call, and then maybe we'll get to our emails and back to some of my questions. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Hillary Hart.
Hello.
Hi, it's you. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Hart?
Yeah, I'm Carmen Forest Rescue, and I've been listening to your show today, and Dr. Hart, and first of all, you know, congratulations on getting her veterinary degree and doing the work that she does. I wanted to see if we could give a, you know, shout out. We just took over a new location in Pinellas Park, and we're going to have a potluck on Sunday, and wanted to invite people out and see if you, you know, we do animal rescue. We save horses from the slaughter, and they come to us from the state and from people who can't feed their horses. And right now we've saved 12, and we have 10 on the property.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I think you have kind of a shaky cell connection. What is the name of the rescue that you're referring to?
It's Carmen's Horse Rescue.
Okay.
So we're located at in Pinellas Park.
Okay. And is there a website or a Facebook? Because we probably should move back on to our conversation with Dr. Hart here.
Sure. Yeah, it's carmenshorserescue.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Right. Thanks. Well, you know, I have heard of your horse rescue, and I do thank you for letting us know about the event on Sunday. And if you'd like to email me the details, if I'm able to attend, I'd be more than happy to attend and meet you. And I'd like to talk to you more because I do enjoy, equine medicine. I don't practice that very much, but I still, would be interested in helping you in any way that I can.
Cool. Well, thank you again for your call. And let's take one of the emails and then get back to some of my questions. So this one says, does the doctor have a recommendation for treating chronic respiratory inflammation other than steroids? We have approximately 5-year-old male rescue dog, large mixed breed. He was diagnosed with a, quote, heavy load of heartworms, unquote. Heartworm treatment is completed successfully, but he gets very congested and may have congestive heart failure. 30 milligrams of prednisone a day works great for his symptoms, but we know he cannot stay on it indefinitely. Thanks.
Right. So I imagine that this dog is under the care of a veterinarian
I would assume based on the prescription,
so,
et cetera. Yeah.
Right. Well, honestly, without examining your dog, that would be, a difficult question to answer because I know, steroids are great for inflammation. They also cause a lot of unwanted side effects. However, if the dog is also having other signs such as congestive heart failure, there are other medications that can be used. But you would really have to, if the dog is being seen by another veterinarian, then, those medications would have to be prescribed.
Yeah, it sounds like not unlike the vaccination situation. It sounds like it would be very specific to that dog.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's a complicated case.
All right, so Dr. Hart, let's talk about some other aspects of Vet with Heart veterinary house call practice, because one of the things that's, I think, very important, not necessarily the most upbeat subjects, but incredibly important ones, would be the hospice care and in-home euthanasia that mm-hmm. you offer. So among the virtues of being a mobile or house call practice is that you're particularly equipped to provide hospice care for these animals and, when needed, perform euthanasia. When you launched your practice, was this sort of part of your design, or did things sort of evolve in that direction?
No, that's also something that I felt from the beginning that I wanted to offer, because as far as in-home euthanasia, I feel that, it's a lot. There are a lot of dogs and cats that, by the time they get to that point where they need to be euthanized, it's difficult for them to get up or the family to move them.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more comforting for them to be in their home, surrounded by loved ones. And it can be very personalized. You can have a memorial service. And so, that's just something. It's about a third of my practice, I would say.
Yeah. So important. And as you say, of course, depending on what kind of condition the animal's in, just makes a big difference that they don't necessarily have to be hauled once again to an office. But obviously, a critical thing, we've talked mm-hmm. about this a number of times on this show, is for the humans. It's so important to be comfortable, be in the living room, or wherever they choose to do that, mm-hmm. but not in an office. That office might be great otherwise, but that's not the setting that you necessarily want to say goodbye to your...
Right, exactly. And so it's a lot more comforting to the entire family. And if there are children or other pets, it allows for, closure. I think it's important that the other animals in the household get to see the dog or cat afterwards, and the family can grieve in the home, with their it's a lot more comfort.
Yeah, and it just seems more natural. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an extremely difficult, wrenching experience at best, but at least if it's home where the dog or the cat hung out and you, the family, are used to being and still very, very difficult, but at least some of those mm-hmm. factors that, again, if you were sitting in an office and it's clean and nice and whatever, but if it's sterile, because it's supposed to be for those purposes, but that's not necessarily what you want, again, saying goodbye. Yeah.
And it also takes away the fear, of the patient and the confusion, and if the patient's in pain, they don't have to experience that, and always use a two-step process where first I'll anesthetize them before I actually perform the euthanasia.
Right, so they're totally relaxed
and
comfortable.
Yeah, they're totally relaxed, yeah. And they don't know, you know, what's going on at that point. And then as far as hospice care, I think that's also a very important part, you know, of my practice. You know,
and how does that work exactly? I mean, you know, all of us, I think, are pretty familiar with hospice care and what that usually means, at least for humans. But how does that work, and what sort of situations, and how long would, well, I'm sure it varies, but typically would hospice care work in the case of a pet, an animal at home?
Right, right. So hospice care obviously is for terminally ill pets or pets. You know, I also see a lot of dogs, especially larger dogs, with, say, hip dysplasia or arthritis, and they can no longer get up, and then they can no longer control their bowels and, you know, and urination, and they're in a lot of pain. So what we work on is pain management, trying to keep them as comfortable as possible during their last days, as long as, you know, they're, you know, still bright and alert and eating, you know, and having a good, we look for the quality of life.
Right.
And that's what's most important.
So
and,
with that
and
in mind,
pain control. Yes.
Right. So with that in mind, how much before the time comes for that animal to be euthanized varies, I guess, by what their condition is. So again, it's always a matter of like they're towards the end, but how long the end is. Again, we dictated by that condition and what kind of pain the animal seems to be in, et cetera.
Right, and also the acceptance of the family. I think that plays a very large role in that. Like sometimes I'll be called out, but well, actually, it will end up being in home euthanasia most of the time. When you know some people, you know, just wait and wait and wait because I think it's more that they can't let go. So
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's tough. And it's, but, you know, I think that if you start hospice care right away, then I think you can get adjusted to the situation that, you know, depending upon the diagnosis. So I have a patient right now with osteosarcoma who's in a lot of pain.
Mm.
And so it's a day-to-day thing. Basically,
yeah.
We're treating for pain, and then when the client just feels that there's more bad days than good days, then that's when we make the decision.
Yeah, it occurs to me as you're describing this, the one thing that would really help with, because I think all of us, maybe not, but most of us certainly have been confronted with the classic, when is the right time? You don't want to push the animal so far just because it's hard for you to say goodbye that they're really in bad shape and pain. No one would ever knowingly do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's usually a kind of a gray area of we know we're going to have to say goodbye soon, but when is the right time? And it seems like if they're getting hospice care from you and there's really kind of closely
mm-hmm.
monitored,
mm-hmm.
those questions then become much more easily answered, I would think.
Right, right. Well, I'm always available to my clients and we either communicate, you know, whenever there's a concern, we, you know, by text or email. And then I always say, well, because the other day I was called out to euthanize a patient, but then they changed their mind because they felt, well, now their dog got up and was seemed to be having a great day. And that's okay, too. So
yeah.
Even if you know, you feel one day they're having a bad day and then things turn around, you know, that's okay too. So we just, you know, we have a relationship with the client and the patient and we, you know, it's basically a day by day.
Yeah. But also I guess, further, as you're describing this, further respond to the idea that, again, you're doing this in the animal's home, obviously on some sort of ongoing basis, but especially just the home part to me, just as I'm thinking about this, because again, you take an ill animal to the vet's office, then you get the whole additional thing of stress. So when you're trying to say, ugh, when do we have to say goodbye? It seems like there's extra factors that sort of cloud that picture. Whereas if they're at home, it's more direct.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I will always advise them what I think, but in the end, you know, I have to leave it up
of
to
course,
the client.
Of course,
right.
Yeah. But it's just those are agonizing decisions. So I'm sure most people would want the expertise of a vet
right,
to sort of guide
right.
them to making that final decision.
Exactly.
All right, let's take, not surprisingly, we've got a bunch of emails and a call or two here. Let's take some of those. This one says, we have 10 dogs, a variety of breeds and sizes, but almost all of them lick and or eat dirt. We feed a very high-quality, top-rated kibble, not the garbage from the grocery store. Ideas, input, should we be concerned?
All of them are eating and licking dirt.
Sounds like it from her email, yeah.
Well, so you could try changing the diet, but I find that common. I have 7 dogs, and they like to eat grass, and, you know, they eat dirt as well. What are you feeding?
This is an email, so yeah, we don't have anything more. Yeah,
right,
so they say we have the,
right,
the high quality kibble, but there's beyond that, there's not further information about the diet. So
right.
I think it sounds like she's probably just asking that because it's sort of across the board, coincidentally or not, of the 10, is there any suggestions to minimize that or even, you know, stop that, I guess?
Right.
Or should they even, I guess, would be another related question.
Right. So if they're all doing it, so it could be a habitual thing, or like you said, you know, it could be related to the diet. There could be some deficiency, but so I would say if you could, you know, try, you know, experiment, try a different food.
And just see how
and
that
then just
affects
see if
their
that makes a difference.
Desire to,
if
yeah,
that doesn't make a difference, then, you know, you could, you know, bring at least one or two of the dogs in to see a veterinarian and, you know, just have a workup and just see, you know, see if there's something
some
else.
Some other deficiency or something that
something
would maybe prompt them to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another one. What is your view on heartworm treatment through a monthly dose for dogs that are house hounds and have little contact with other animals? How about the need to treat dogs that live on a farm with cows, donkeys, and chickens?
So you're talking about heartworm prevention?
What your view is on heartworm treatment.
Yeah. Okay. So heartworm, first of all, all dogs in the state of Florida should be on heartworm prevention. Now, there is what you call fast kill and what you call slow kill. So the benefits of a fast kill is that within some veterinarians use there's like a 2-3 treatment protocol. So the benefit of using that protocol would be that, you know, they're cured of their heartworm disease quickly, and so that in the long run, it's healthier for them. However, it is a lot more expensive than doing slow kill. I mean, the issues that I have, slow kill can work, but the issues that I have with slow kill is that, you know, it can take 2 years for the adults to die. So during that time, they're still there causing damage to the heart and the lungs. Mm. And so that's why I prefer using the fast kill method. I mean, no matter what way you go, there's always going to be risks.
Right.
And then, you know, I would say you also have to look at, because if there's a large number of animals, so economically that it may not be feasible for you to do a fast kill, but you just have to be aware that there can be some medical repercussions if you are doing slow
kill. The other method. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Let's take a call. First, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Hillary Hart, a Tampa veterinarian and animal welfare activist. We'll get to some of that in a moment or two. We'll just have a few minutes left here together, but we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Hart.
Hi, my name is Lauren Shepherd, and thank you so much for the topic, particularly of end of life for our family pets. We have a 14-year-old Labrador that we were felt was very close to the end. We're finally aligned as a family in terms of, you know, what will happen when that day comes. At one point, he, because of what we presumed was hip dysplasia, which he has pretty bad, he collapsed and couldn't walk. Took him to the vet and turned out to be a torn ACL. And with some medications, he's back on his feet. He eats every day. He's not lively, of course, but he responds and is aware. But we know that the day is coming soon. And all my questions were pretty much answered just by listening to your last segment. The only question I do have for the doctor is, does she do something between hospice and just some consultation? Can we come in and meet with her, or maybe just contact her to consult to sort of help us prepare?
Oh, most definitely. So if you go to my website, www.vetwithheart.com.
And that's H-A-R-T, and, just to be extra clear.
Yep. Yes. You can fill out the register. I have a registration form. You could fill that out. And then, you know, I will be happy to contact you then, and we can talk more about it. And the same goes for any of the other callers or people that emailed me. You know, it's a little bit difficult to answer some of these questions in a short, because I have to answer briefly. But I'm more than willing to, you know, follow up on the, you know, the calls or the emails, okay, and give you some more information, or if you, you know, would like to make an appointment with me as well.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for your call. Vetwithheart.com. That's vetwithheart, H-A-R-T.com. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, let's. We only have a couple minutes really left. Let me try to blast through a couple more emails, maybe at least one more call. This one says, thank you for your work and compassion for animals. I was shocked to learn that our wonderful vet's practice does decline. Should I mention my disappointment or just mind my own business? Do you ever try to talk people out of declining their cats?
I always try to talk people out of declining their cats. And I do feel that you should mention that to your veterinarian, because if enough of the clients also voice their opinion, then maybe the veterinarian, you know, veterinarians are people too, and they want to know, you know, how their clients feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know. Maybe the veterinarian would change his or her philosophy. You just never know. People grow, you know.
Yeah, well, no, that's great to hear, because that's a topic we've covered a lot on this show. We had Dr. Jennifer Conrad on a bunch of times, and there's this great movie out, The Paw Project and stuff. But there's a lot of people that just don't seem to know about what happens when you declaw cats, and of course, a lot of vets that do it, and I got to believe they must know. But yeah, it's interesting to hear you say, yeah, go ahead and at least broach it and see what happens. So, gosh, we're just going to maybe try to take one more email here. I'm sorry we can't get to more emails or calls, but I'm glad for what we could do. This says, I have a 9-year-old toy poodle that was diagnosed with cataracts. My vet suggests that we take her to a specialist, but as you know, that cost could be expensive. My husband thinks that since she already has cataracts, there's no need for further diagnosis. However, my feeling is that maybe there is a type of medication available that could slow the degenerative disease. What do you think?
Well, I'm not aware of any medication to slow the degeneration, to slow down the development of the cataracts. But I am aware of some of my patients have had cataract surgery. They've had the lenses removed and then one lens replacement in one eye, and it worked very well for, you know, all of the patients that I know.
Wow, cool.
So, yeah.
All right, so Dr. Hart, we're sort of almost past being out of time, but one of the things I just want to quickly address, even if we can't really discuss it today, but maybe we'll come back another time and we can discuss this. But among the traits that would seem to distinguish your story, like becoming a veterinarian later in life, is that by your own description, you're an animal welfare activist. Were you an animal activist who became a veterinarian, or a veterinarian who became an animal welfare activist?
I've always been an activist, a human rights, and I'm an animal rights activist.
Okay.
The reason I used welfare is because I think whenever you, animal rights has a negative connotation in the veterinary world. So
yeah,
that's
and,
why.
And in broader and, worlds often, I think these days too, frankly.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I worked with Wayne Pacelli and from the Humane Society, and also Florida Voices for Animals on banning gestation crates. That was back in 2000, I believe. And then also I support feral trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return programs, and also mandatory spay and neuter in Pinellas County, which is now It's now called RBI. I can't even at this moment. I can't remember what the R stands for because we just changed the name of it. But you know, I believe that we have a problem with pet overpopulation, and the best way to curb that is to, you know, prevent breeding of animals. But not, right. I do believe that. So if you want to breed your pet, then you need to have a special license to do that.
Yeah.
But there's no need, in my opinion, for other people.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully delve into this and some of your other work in that way and some of the things I was hoping to get into today, including, you know, feral cats and TNR and all kinds of stuff. But we have actually gone beyond our time today, so we will invite you back and hopefully you'll join us again. So we've been speaking with Dr. Hillary Hart. Her practice is called Vet with Heart, Veterinary House Call Practice. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your email or call, but as she's mentioned, her website is Vet with Heart, H-A-R-T again, vetwithheart.com. You can contact her through that, fill out forms if you'd like to make an appointment, and there you go. So, Dr. Hart, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals and all your great work on behalf of our animal friends.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, and it's Responsible Breeding Imperative. That's what it's called. It just came to me.
Boom, just like a big light bulb.
There,
excellent.
Right. Okay.
All right, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right.
All right, in just a few minutes, we'll speak with Pat Hose about this Saturday's 5th Annual Parade of Rescues in Pinellas Park. First, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called Adopting a Dog on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
So we rescued a puppy, which is great. You rescued a puppy before. Okay, beautiful. It's a great thing. Millions of dogs are put to sleep every year because there's not enough homes. And you go in and you're a hero. You go save one. You walk in there, and you think it's going to be easy. You're like, I'll take that one. They're like, oh, not so fast, asshole. First, you got to fill out this 28-page application, right? Name, social security number. If you and your wife divorce, who gets custody of the dog? I don't know. We never talked about it. Thanks for planting that seed for us. And then they set up a home inspection. I'm not making this up. Literally, woman shows up to my house, clipboard, little beard, light beard, didn't see it at first. And now she's looking around my house while I stand out front waiting. Just nervous that she's gonna come out and be like, yeah, we're just gonna go ahead and kill the dog. This doesn't feel right to let him live here the way you do.
All right. We'll hear more of Greg Fitzsimmons next time. That was his piece called Adopting a Dog, taken from his album, Life on Stage. All right. To fill us in on the 5th Annual Parade of Rescues taking place this Saturday in Pinellas Park, let's welcome Pat Hose to Talking Animals. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
I'm glad to be here.
All right, great. So give us the nickel tour. What is the Parade of Rescues? And we know it's happening this Saturday, but where and when and some of those other key details?
Well, basically, Parade of Rescues is a meeting of about 30 rescue organizations within the area over at the Pet Supplies Plus in Pinellas Park. A lot of peas in that.
Yeah.
We started doing this 5 years ago as a way to get, you know, more pets adopted. And we've had a really good turnout. It's grown from year to year. We've got pet food vendors, suppliers that are going to be there. Hopefully we'll have a lot of adoptable animals, and we're praying to the rain gods that the weather is just perfect.
Yeah. Sounds like right now, at least, sounds like the worst that might happen is it might be a little cool, but hopefully it won't be wet, right?
No, it looks like it's going to be a nice sunny day, and cool will actually be good for the animals.
Absolutely. That's always a godsend when that happens on these events. So, Pat, so this is your number 5. It'd be interesting to know, like, let's say last year, for example, how many pets, animals were adopted through this parade last year?
I'm thinking about 25. We did
fairly
well.
Great.
Each year, you know, we do a little bigger. Every rescue operates by their own charter, so some will adopt on site, but a lot of rescues do home visits, vet checks. So it's a way to meet and greet and maybe really get a feel for what rescue is and what our groups do. We're kind of a middle ground.
Right. Great. So folks can just turn up there, and there's a array of these rescues and other animal welfare organizations, and kind of just sort of browse around and, you know, see, meet some new animals that may or may not want to become part of your family and vice versa, it sounds like.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful event. We have a lot of fun doing it. You know, and it's great to meet the public, and it's nice for the public to understand, you know, what we need in the animal world. And we're really so grateful that, you know, the Pet Supplies Plus people really want to help us do this. So,
yeah, no, that's really great. And it sounds like really that it's been effective. I mean, it sounds like if last year 25 animals found homes they didn't have the day before the parade, and with any luck, maybe it'll be even that many and more this year. That's fantastic.
Right, right.
So, Pat, is there a either website or Facebook page or somewhere where people could just double check the details, or if they came in a bit late or just tuned in and wanted to find out more about the parade, they could check that?
Well, they can go to the Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay website, which is dalrescuetampabay.org, and there's a link that will bring up the poster and the rescues that are planning to attend.
Oh, great.
You can also check with us on Facebook. It's posted on our personal Facebook page, or just, you know, throw in the word Parade of Rescues into the search on Facebook.
And it'll come up.
Participating rescues also have the flyer up.
That's terrific. That's great. So it's not like one way or the other. You could search for it and come up with it pretty quick. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we have enough of a track record, we're actually findable now. So.
That's great. Progress, progress. Excellent. Well, that sounds like a really great event, and we'll hope that, again, a bunch more animals find homes on Saturday. So that's this Saturday, the 18th, at Pinellas Park. So thanks again, Pat, for joining us today on Talking Animals, and fill us in on the annual parade, fifth annual parade of rescues.
Great. We appreciate the help.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, which we're rapidly approaching, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Wendy Kelly's book, Bougie and Me, Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me. We'll get to that in a moment or two here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, let's hit some animal news and announcements. Wanted to call your attention, first of all, to a piece by Frank Bruni, the New York Times columnist, ran a couple days ago. So obviously you can find it online, called Courting Animals Dignity. And all about sort of advances that and changes in the animal welfare landscape and just awareness, touching on everything from sort of the jumping off point was a post that became the sort of most emailed post for a while there at the New York Times about the book Cat Sense by John Bradshaw, of course, a past guest on Talking Animals. But the piece talks about also this new website, The Dodo, that's dedicated to animal news and features and made its debut this week and touches on Blackfish and Bill de Blasio's priority to retire the Central Park carriage horses and more. So absolutely recommended reading. And also, whatever you think of PETA and in the animal welfare community, I think opinions are pretty pretty divided, sometimes within the same person even. But regardless of whether you're a pro-PETA or anti, you're likely to support what they've done here. They have donated $1 million worth of costly training mannequins to medical school in nine countries to accomplish two goals, giving doctors some more modern training and saving the lives of about 1,000 animals a year. So the mannequins, called surgical simulators, are used in 98% of the trauma medicine courses in the United States offered by the American College of Surgeons. Students use them, for example, to practice cutting holes between ribs to insert chest tubes. But because each mannequin can cost $24,000 and needs regular replacement of its $100 simulated skin, many medical schools in poorer countries cannot afford them. So PETA got the Simulab Corporation, which makes TraumaMan the most popular simulator, to make a cheaper version. Got them to 64, I think, mannequins donated to medical schools in Bolivia, Costa Rica, Egypt, Iran, Jordan, Mexico, Mongolia, Panama, and Trinidad. So, and the schools will be then, when need be able to buy replacement skin for about $30. So there you go. Good for PETA. So mentioned this a couple other times, and time may be running out, or at least appointments, but the Humane Society of Tampa Bay has been running this great deal that we can't describe precisely. We're not allowed to mention prices on the air, as you probably know by now, but to get your male dog or cat fixed for an incredibly reasonable rate, contact the Humane Society. You do need to have an appointment to get on this, and there's limited availability. Call 813-870-3304 or go to Humane Society Tampa. .org. All right, that's probably going to do it for our animal news an announcement segment today. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. It's a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. There'll be a prize, in this case, a copy of the book Bougie and Me, Seven Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me by animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly. And to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this is our animal tune. You can correctly identify this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We might take that off the air, but if you can actually identify the band that's doing that, we'll probably throw in an extra prize. Anyways, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, January 22nd, with Richie Moretti, founder and director of the Turtle Hospital in Marathon, sort of the go-to guy when it comes to rescuing, healing, and releasing sea turtles. I hope you'll join me for that next Wednesday. What the heck? Let's take one. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
The bird can sing?
Yeah, now here's the bonus question. Can you identify the band that was doing that version? What's that?
I didn't listen to it long enough. Was it Badfinger?
No. Okay. Well, what is your first name, sir?
Benny.
Denny?
Benny, oh. Like my cousin.
Okay. All right. Okay, Vinny, like your cousin. All right, so I'm going to put you on hold. Congratulations. You have one. By the way, that was Wilco doing that version. Okay, thanks. All right, so, Richie Moretti next week talking about sea turtles. Hope you'll join us for that. Go to TalkingAnimals.net and also go to either the Talking Animals Facebook page or my personal page, and you'll find, again, a link to our tip jar if you'd like to donate in support of Talking Animals today, which I highly recommend. That's all found, again, on Facebook, and you can find links to all that from TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And kind of a cool animal song lined up here. Not really enough time to hear it, so we'll save it for next week. What do you say about that? So again, our thanks to Dr. Hillary Hart for coming in studio to join us today on Talking Animals. We'll have her back at some other point and cover more ground, take some more calls, get us some of the things we didn't have a chance to talk about today. And again, sorry we didn't get to some of the emails and phone calls for her. We just ran out of time. Also, our thanks to Pat Hose for giving us the lowdown on the 5th annual Parade of Rescues happening this Saturday at Pinellas Park. It's WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speaking again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.